5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on.
When I see my baby, what do I see? Poetry, poetry in motion.
The all-new Panic Room radio show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, good evening, one and all. Well, one, I suppose. Good evening, listener. Good to have you know. Good to know that you're there in your mother's basement, listening to the show once again. And it is the new Panic Room radio show, episode 271, on what promises to be the 14th of April, 2022, which is I just say before I came on air, I cannot believe it is April, or halfway through April already. It's kind of scary. And obviously Easter weekend, which is when we celebrate the birth of the Easter Bunny, which is a monumental moment in history. And one of my favorite memes circulating at the moment, and I make no apologies for sharing it, is a shout out to Judas for the upcoming long weekend. So Judas, thank you. And maybe the Romans as well, you know, they had their part. So we get a four-day weekend, which is phenomenal. But anywho, it wouldn't be a Panic Room show without the old mate Mucker Xtina. texting, and it is it's Thursday again, and it was only like Thursday yesterday. I don't know, but the time is just flying. It's going to be fucking Christmas before we know it, you know. And but it's funny, you know, a few people said to me, you know, what are you doing for Easter? You know, there's like a big thing here, and it's like, well, it's just like, I don't know, what am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do? The kids are too old for Easter egg hunts, and they'll probably insist on me buying them chocolate and what have you. But
yes,
I know last year I bought them like proper, they went to the English store and bought them. Big Cadbury's Easter egg. It was stupid money. So, I've decided this year I don't love them that much. So, I bought my daughter, it was like a big sort of Easter egg with, I forget what was in it, a Kit Kat or something, and it was $26, and she'd eaten it, she didn't melt it before we got home, to be honest. I remember I read an article many years ago that, you know, pound for pound, Easter eggs is like, you know, for chocolate, I mean, you'd be better off just buying the big, you know, just like a big bar of chocolate. But because it's an Easter egg shape, it's thin chocolate. I mean, it's like something like quadruple the price of just buying ordinary chocolate. And for me, you know, it's about the chocolate.
Yeah.
You know, again, it's that time of year when we celebrate chocolate and the day that Jesus invented chocolate. So, but, you know, quadrupling the price is wrong.
Ever since I was little, we do, you know, a nice meal on Easter. My mom always made a ham, so I make a ham and all the fixings and everything. And then the kids each get an Easter basket with a little Easter bunny, you know, little stuffed animal bunny in there.
Yeah, we used to do all of that. Yeah, the Easter basket and everything.
I still do it.
Oh, dear. Well, I did last year, you know. My son's not a big chocolatey person. It's funny because I did the Easter basket thing, and then it'd get to sort of like Halloween. And it built, are you going to eat that chocolate? I'd end up begging it off him. So what I would do then each year, I would buy the chocolate that I liked to put in his Easter basket, knowing damn well in about, you know, 4 or 5 months down the line, I'd be eating it. So, as they get older, like I said, I mean, we used to hide Easter eggs for them and everything. And that used to be fun. That used to be fun. I remember one year I'd miscounted, and like for an hour the kids were hunting around for an Easter egg that just didn't exist. And we said, no, that was...
Are you sure you miscounted?
I did. I miscounted. I worked backwards. I miscounted, so I had the poor kid. I never told them. That's probably going to be a deathbed revelation. So remember that Easter, you'll give that
definitely
egg for an hour. That was that was my fault. I didn't say anything. We just, we'll give up.
It sounds like a good way to get some quiet time, though. I like that.
Well, it worked far, but then they started getting frustrated and pissy because they couldn't find this bloody egg, you know. So, that was kind of my fault.
The baskets have definitely gotten smaller, not that the kids are older, but we tried not doing them last year. My daughter's, you know, she was 23 last year, and we were like, no, you're too old for baskets. She had a fit, so we ended up, you know, doing the basket thing, and I'm doing it this year. And I think I'm just stuck doing them for the rest of my life.
It's more about family tradition, really, than... anything else, really.
Definitely,
it's kind of cool. It's kind of nice, but... So, excuse me. I'm sorry if I don't get my daughter at least something. Something chocolatey. She'll probably have a fit.
Definitely.
We shall see. So, anywho, I just inhaled some water. And a little PSA for the listeners out there, don't inhale water. What have we got on the show this evening, if anything at all?
You know... One of these weeks, I'm going to be like, no, I got nothing. We're just going to sit here and talk.
That would be brilliant.
Hour and a half.
What we got on the show. I couldn't be able to change anything this week. So that would be lovely.
Yeah, no.
We'd have a NASA for an hour, and it'd be great. I'll enjoy that.
I'm actually trying to figure out how to put together something to celebrate our, what, 300th show? Is that coming up?
Do you know, I was thinking about that the other day. Yeah. I mean, it's going to be a few weeks away yet. But
Well, that's still a while away. I mean, every time we've had one of those big, you know, we had, I think, a 100th show and then the 200th, and it's always so special.
Did you do anything for 250? So I think 250 just slipped by, didn't it?
I think so, too, yeah. So, yeah. No, we have a great show tonight. Later on in the show, we'll have a returning guest, Stephen Bizidlo, and we had him on, six months ago, sometime last year, I think it was, and he was a great guest.
Do you know, it's funny, we saying that, so it was on a few months ago, and then it turned out it was 2018, it's just like...
That has happened, yes, it's scary. I mean, I was talking with Ref James White, because we're going to have him on the show again soon.
Oh, brilliant.
And,
I love him. Yeah.
And when I looked him up to see how long ago he'd been on the show, and it was like 2017 or 2016, I was like,
Jeez.
Oh my gosh, it's been a long time. Yeah.
I still remember fondly we did 11 questions with him, and that was revelatory. I'm not going to spoil any surprise, but that was revelatory. I still fondly remember that, actually.
I do too. I think about it just randomly when I ask the question. I do, and it's he was great. He didn't miss a beat either. I think that was the funniest part.
Was it just me that went straight onto Pornhub and looked that up, or did you do that as well?
You know what? A lady never talked about such things.
You did, didn't you? I did. I thought, wow, oh, there's a thing. And
It's a thing. Yeah.
It actually started a thing with me where every now, you know, obviously we're creative people, and obviously a lot of creative people listen to the show. That, you know, you get these random things pop into your head, and sometimes I think, I wonder if there's some porn of that. It's the most random thing. And literally 99% of the time, yes, there is. Stinging nettle porn, that's the thing. And it's like,
wow.
why just, you know, I mean, come on, we all like a little bit of porn, but seriously, but what on earth made them suddenly figure out, yeah, I'm going to do this because this is going to get, I'm going to get my jollies doing this. And they're like, no.
Yeah, there's all sorts of fetishes. And it does make you wonder the first time, how did you decide this is what I want to do? It's so bizarre. Yeah. But you know what? I don't kink shame. So, you know, you do you.
I very much live and let live, and if as long as you know it's all consensual and nobody's getting hurt, you know, unwillingly, then yeah, you have at it. But I've been endlessly fascinated by, you know, some of the stuff that sort of get people going. So I found many years ago, back in England, the company I owned, the staff actually bought me a book called it's like the Dictionary of Unusual Sexual Practices. You know what I should do? You know what I'm going to do? We need to make
We need to have
Unusual Sexual Practices Corner, and each week I'll read out a couple from the book. You know, pick a couple really way out ones and just read a couple from the book. That would be fantastic, because it is fascinating stuff. And some of the stuff in there is like, what? Yeah,
I definitely second that segment. I mean, you would probably enjoy that one way more than my baseball corner. So,
funnily enough, I would enjoy some of the practices in the book more than Baseball Corner, because, you know, Baseball Corner is terrible. But there you go. Anyway, so we could prattle on about unusual sexual practices all evening, but I'm guessing we've got a show to do. So I think you should welcome our very very first guest of the evening.
All righty, the first guest of the Panic Room tonight is fiction writer A.C. Turner. Woo!
Crowd is going wild.
The crowd they do go very wild. Yes.
I'm still trying to recover from. You from playing dueling banjos from Deliverance. It brought back a lot of memories. Not good ones, but a lot of memories. Just letting you know.
I'm from there as well. I mean, for first step, probably where she's from. Deliverance is more of a documentary, really, than fiction.
That is not true.
She used to live in a trailer on people three doors down. I had a donkey in the front yard. I mean, so don't load it up, XD. Do not.
I'm no longer in a trailer, but I will say that neighbors or something not too far away caught, I think it was a goat on their front porch with one of those, the doorbell camera. So was, but
never
you know,
what happened
stop
to that goat. Who knows? The goat was there. Maybe the guys at Banjo started playing the same song for a goat. All right.
Quite possibly. And who doesn't love goats? I mean, I knew a guy years ago had those little pygmy goats, and he just had them running around his backyard, and they are so adorable. I mean, they're the size of a small dog, and they were just, I just wanted one.
Yeah,
we
I dated a sheep for a while, but you pulled the wool over my eyes, so, okay.
Oh, dear. Here we go.
We take back roads all the time whenever we're going places, and I see all the, there's goats and little donkeys, and I get so excited, and then I want one, and the boyfriend, he won't let me have a donkey or goats. I mean, I think that's mean.
That
it
is mean. Be careful of those back roads. Be careful of those back roads, okay? Don't go down there. You'll be writing a book about that. Don't do it.
I think there's so many movies being made like that, that they literally take a wrong turn. I mean, I like the wrong turn movies, actually. It's been done so many times. It's almost, you think, literally, as soon as you get out of the suburbs, the countryside is just filled with, inbred mutant people, cannibals and all that.
Yeah.
So just don't go out. I think that's the safest thing.
Yeah, but if I don't go out, I won't meet my relatives. So they're the ones out there, the mutant people. So we're good to go.
That is a good reason not to go out. If you knew my relatives,
No, they're there. They're there. I come from a long line of white trash. Don't worry about it. I'm that guy.
Well, you're in good company here. So H.C. Finn is here to talk to us about his book, Semper Fi Brother. Brilliant, brilliant book. I've had the pleasure of actually reading it. So there. And I'll warn you now, AC, XT, at some point we'll try and beg a signed copy off you. So you've been warned.
Okay, not a problem.
Tell us all about it.
Well, I have a screenwriting background. Originally it was a screenplay. And what happened was I won a contest with it from Final Draft. I came in the top 4 out of 9,000 scripts. And I got an agent out of it, and he sent it to a couple production companies. This is before COVID, about 2.5 years ago. Once it hit COVID, they were very happy about it. They loved it. They were going to talk. COVID hit. Everybody went undercover, underground. They all disappeared. When COVID finally kind of was done, everybody forgot about it. Other projects have jumped up, and my trip was put up to the side. So I said, you know what? I'm going to write a book. So I wrote a book. I turned into a book. I extended the backstories of all the characters, and I thought the story was too important not to be told, so I wanted to get it out there. It meant a lot to me to get it out there. It was about a Marine who's now 64 years old. It's 2014. He had messed up in Vietnam, although he won the Congressional Medal of Honor. When he did that, it was basically a panic. He was a 19-year-old Marine, panicked, and he left two of his best friends behind. And they, of course, they died, and he's been living with that for a long time. He's somewhat successful reality TV star, has his own show, and he has a bar in L.A., but he's never quite gotten over that. So it's about that guy. It's a story of redemption. He gets another chance in 2014 to help one of his workers, Q, a Yazidi. Yazidis are a religious group in Syria. They're a little different than the rest, and ISIS absolutely hated them. So when ISIS reared its ugly head, they went up to Yazidi villages first. and nobody was there to help except the Serbs and some Americans. So it's a story about a guy going back and looking for redemption, trying to save his employee's mother and daughter from, you know, the inevitable.
Wow. That's...
Cool. Yeah.
Hello? Yeah, that's... I'm just listening. That is... that's pretty heavy stuff there, yeah. And is it based on a true story, or...?
Yeah, well, you know, my dad, my pop was a career Marine, and my daughter's been over to Afghanistan a couple times. She's Army, and I have all their experiences. And, you know, I never went in because there was nothing going on back then. And I have a lot of comedy. My background is really a comedy writer. I do a lot of comedy. So I have a lot of comedy, and I don't make it totally dreary. It's not like Manchester by the Sea where you want to shoot yourself in the head after it's over. So it's got a lot of comedy in it.
So you do know Manchester not by the sea, don't you?
Yeah, it was. I lived not too far from there. Yeah, so I know the area, and I was like, oh, what a hard. Well, it was a good movie, but you don't want to see it twice. So anyhow, it's a lot of humor in it. It's a lot of fun. You follow this character, and like I said, I read the screenplay. It got all the way out number within 5 out of 9,000. So it was pretty impressive. They gave me an agency, APA, and they were trying to push it and got to that point. But I said, you know what? Let's write a book. I'm 62 years old. I'm too tired to wait for a 25-year-old pimple face at some studio to make a movie out. Let me write a book, you know. At the end of the day, my name is on it. My kids like it, and I get it out there, and that's what it's all about. So, you know, I'm tired of playing the Hollywood game, so I wanted to just write books, and I have two more coming out in about 6 months. So we're excited
that's
about
fantastic.
That, too.
It's a process I've been through. I mean, I started my writing career certainly here in the States, screenwriting. It is easier to get a book out there than get a screenplay, even to get someone to look at a screenplay. I'm going to ask, I'm obviously writer to writer. I mean, how did you find the process of translating a screenplay into a book?
Well, you find out you have to – see, in a screenplay, you have camera direction. You have all these different elements that goes into it. What I was – I needed help to, and I really worked hard, was the narrative, the dialogue. In a screenplay, you put the person's name up, and you put dialogue underneath it. Simple as that. In a book, you have to start explaining why he's saying that, what's going on. You know, you have to do a lot of different things you didn't do in a screenplay. You're able to cheat in a screenplay to get away with stuff. So in a book, you have to get more detailed on the verbalization of dialogue. You have to be more detailed. You got to bring people in on the book. You have to bring them in. Hopefully I did that with the book.
I mean, it works well. You know, I mean, was it a long process? I mean, it took me far longer to translate the one book I did from a screenplay than it did to write any of my other novels from scratch. Because like you say, in your mind, a lot of it's done. Because, oh, it's in the screenplay, you know, but it's not, because obviously the screenplay, the director will do a lot and the actors will do a lot. Like you say, in the book, you're on your own. You've just got to do it all yourself.
You're on your own. I took my number two pencil. I go to two libraries that I love. I go to these two libraries. I find libraries the most energized place on the face of the earth. You go in there around all those books. They're all talking to you. You get the energy of the books being there. You sit down in a chair and you start writing at a library with a number two pencil. Nothing beats that. There's nothing more fun than that. So that's what I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. I miss going to – when I was a kid, you know, our fortnightly trip to the library to pick out three or four books we used to get was like a big event. You know, we used to look forward to it. It was exciting. So just being around all those books, picking them out, and wonderful.
It's an energy, you know. I mean, I really get a thrill. It's the closest thing to, you know, I used to play college football, the kind of thrill of going in there and getting the energy from, you know, doing all the stuff I did in football back in the day. So it's fun. I enjoy it. I'm going to write more books, and I don't care if I get 7 sold. I'm writing books that I feel like need to write books. I mean, seriously, I'm good to go.
Brilliant. I mean, it's like a lot of people, you probably get it as well, you know, as soon as, you know, you say you're a writer, you know, and they say, well, you know, why do you do that? And a lot of writers we know, and I know Xtine's the same, is we write because we have to. We really don't have a choice. It's there. The stuff's got to come out. I feel if it didn't come out, it would drive me insane. It would just all right. Because once it's written down, it's out of your head. Okay, more stuff comes, but it's just that constant getting it out there, which I think it is.
100%.
We need to do it for our sanity, you know?
Right, it's 100%. I'm doing, like I said, I'm writing two books right now. I'm having an absolute ball doing it, and it's just, it's great, and I'm going to have them out. And my goal is the rest of my life, you know, I got 25 good years left, I feel like. I work out a lot, stay in shape. I want to write two books a year and just get them out there. I'll be like Grandma Moses, an old guy writing books. I don't care. I like to write and have fun doing it.
Perfect.
That's what I'm out there
Absolutely.
To do. And my hair is terrific. My hair is terrific, so that's a big part of everything.
It is. It's probably the most important part of everything. When you get that
as long as my hair is good, I'm good to go.
Right. It's funny you say that. I've been mowing my hair because my hairdresser got pregnant, and it was not me. I just don't feel like I can be unfaithful. So my hair's getting pretty long now, and I'm my hair's
still
long. And then you see people even younger than me who don't have that problem because they don't have hair. So I really shouldn't grumble, you know.
Yeah, I don't want to get that hair swirl where you start swirling your hair around to cover all the acreage. I don't want to be that guy. So I'm good to go. I might not be the greatest writer in the world. I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but damn, my hair looks good.
There you go. You've got it all going on, man.
I want to hear more about your book. I think we have an excerpt that you're going to read for us.
Oh yeah, I thought okay. I will read an excerpt from it. I sent it over to you. I thought you were going to read it, but you know, I can read. I can do pretty good with that stuff.
Oh, you don't want me to read it? It would just be awful. I've tried that before, and it's just
right. Okay, it's a situation where they're in Yarmouk, a town in Syria. And they're kind of waiting to be attacked for the second time by ISIS, and they're all huddled up in the building, and they survived so far. And Gunny O'Malley, who's our hero, he's the Marine. He's with his best friend, Buzz, who's kind of a gambling loser. He come along. He's a good shooter, but everything else in his life has kind of failed, and he decided to come because he has nothing else to live for. And so we're talking about war and what war is really like, and they're kind of in a bunker. O'Malley shook his head. No, I don't mind telling you, I'm a little scared, said Buzz. We all are, Gunny answered. Even you, Gunny, sir? Yes, I am. Buzz laughed. He's putting you on. He's our war hero. Gunny is not afraid of shit. Let me tell you something. This is war. You better be scared. Scared out of your wits, or you won't make it. Besides, I ain't no fucking war hero. If I was, I'd be 6 feet deep in some fucked up cemetery. What? Asked Q. Q is another, he's the guy he went to fight for, the Yazidi. Goddamn CMH was the worst thing that ever happened to me. I never saved anybody in that. Never rescued my platoon. Shit. We got caught off guard, pinned down, and when we hit the fan, I ran, and nothing in the world was going to stop me. Everybody else just fall behind me. You were only 18, Buzz jumped in. No excuses, no fucking excuses. I was in charge, plain and simple. I didn't do my job, and two of my buddies never came home. Mikhail and Johnson, Buzz guessed. Right. They were my Semper Fi brothers. I see their faces every goddamn night. Bottom line, I ain't no hero. Far from it. You shut up, Buzz shouted. The war was bullshit. You should have never been over there. You were blamed. You want to blame someone? Blame the fucking politicians. You were a kid. No excuses. Those kids, the Marines who followed you out there that day, I know. They get on their knees every night and thank God you ran out. They got home. And they live out their lives because a crazy black Irishman, Seamus Patrick O'Malley, decided to get the fuck out of that bad situation. That's it. Basically, he's a half black, half Irish guy, and he was raised by his Irish grandfather. His parents get killed. He's raised in Fontana, California, and that's where it comes from. And he's a hero. He's regretting getting the CMH. It really bothered him. He got it. It was like so he's been fighting that his whole life. Now he's in his chance to redeem himself, and that's where he's at.
And you cut that reading just off way too shortly, and I definitely, when you go to make out the signed copy, that's XTINA. I'm going to have to read it for myself now that you just cut that off so short.
I told you. She's got shells at home.
It's funny. I've had four women write me. I've gotten really great reviews, which is like. I'm always shocked when I get a great review, It's like, oh, okay. It's like, what? I got all 5-star reviews so far, which is really like, wow, okay. I must have done something right.
Yeah.
So it's good. I didn't think women would like it. I didn't think women would like the book because there's a lot of war stuff in it, and I'm surprised they like it. It caught me off guard a little bit, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, but I think it, because it's not just a war book. I mean, like you say, the message is redemption. The dialogue is just phenomenal. Obviously, you can tell it was a screenplay because the dialogue is really, really good. It's a great. Who doesn't love a story about you know redemption and all the rest of it? So I can see that. It's funny, I received for one of my books, I received a 1-star. Stinking review this week. It was, just like, it was a woman.
This
and,
week? Oh,
that was this week. She actually managed to find a couple of things that she liked about it, but she was absolutely scathing. It was like, okay, well, maybe you didn't like it then. You know, it's like, do not buy this book. Do not read this book. It is awful. It's like, okay, so not your cup of tea then, love. You know.
I wrote the Danny O'Malley character. I worked in television as a location manager for Aaron Spelling and Warner Brothers for way back in my youth when I was young. And I worked on a TV show called The Yellow Rose of Texas. And on that show, our star was a guy named Sam Elliott. He was the original guy I had in mind when I wrote the script.
He had gotten older.
Yeah, and I love Sam. Sam is the greatest human being you're ever going to meet. The greatest, not just an actor, greatest person you're ever going to meet. Mm-hmm. And I wrote it for him. We got too old for it. And I wanted to spice it up a little. So I made the character a mixed-colored kid. So it's really worked out well. I liked it. But it was really meant for Sam Elliott. That's who I wrote it for.
Oh, fantastic. He's great. He's really good. Yeah.
Yes.
I just saw him with
the Yellowstone, the prequel or something, 18...
The Yellow, yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
He was great. I love
him. He's great. He's a great actor and a great human being. To be honest with you, I'm working on that show was only great because he was great. He made the whole show work together. That's what I wrote it for, as a favor to him. But he got too old. He did me a favor when I was working. I had gotten laid off during the hiatus by the unit production manager. They always come in, a new unit production manager comes in, you guys know, and they get rid of all the location people. And they bring their own people in. So I went to the set one day to see a friend of mine, and Sam says, "Why aren't you working?" I said, "I got laid off." And his face turned ashen red. He was so mad. That night I got a call from the unit production manager and said, "Glenn, you have a lot of powerful friends here. You need to come back to work tomorrow." And that was Sam Elliott.
Wow.
Nice.
Great guy.
What a guy.
Now, you say that your main character in the book is a reality TV star. That is one of my weaknesses, is reality TV.
Right.
And without spoiling it too much for me, how real is reality TV?
I talked to a girl who's producing one of those shows. She's been on a couple of them, right? I was talking to her, and she's a producer. Mm-hmm. She sits behind the camera and gives tidbits to the people while they're filming. You know what's his face said about you? You know what she said about you, and all this stuff. And they get their ire up and anger up. And they're constantly being manipulated by producers. Everything is manipulated in those shows. Everything's manipulated.
Before it was like really big, I think one of the first reality TV shows was The Real World, I believe. And I was such a fan. Oh, I was glued to the TV. And I do think the first couple of seasons were, I mean, I could be just naive, but to me they were a little more real than they became, you know, that's just my impression of them. But man, did I love those shows. I did.
Denny's reality show. Remember Arlie Ermey, the old Marine that was in that movie, I forget, Apocalypse, I forget what it was. And he had a show about talking about guns and missiles and how everything works in the military. That's his reality show. Uh-huh. He talks about guns and stuff like that. That's what he does. But he's drunk half the time. So it's pretty funny. He's drunk half the time. He's got a lot of issues, and he's got a girlfriend who's great, and it's just, you know, I'm telling you, it's a lot of fun. It's a fun book. It moves fast. I move back and forth from Syria to nowadays. I have a lot of flashbacks. It's fun. It's a good read. It's fast. It should be able to read in 3 or 4 hours, so, you know, that's what it is.
Wow. Now, you said you're working on other books right now, or you have other books in the works? Are there going to be sequels, or just totally different?
I have two. I have two that are halfway finished, and one was a screenplay. I'm turning that one. I have this crazy comedy coming out, and it's called Argentina Fish in a Frying Pan Take on the Chi-Coms, Chinese Chi-Coms. It's about the whole math thing, and it's a little bit Darth Vader stuff. Her mother's like kind of a Darth Vader character, comes back, and it's a lot of fun. That's fun. And I got a horror film coming out based on the fracking up in North Dakota. These towns went from 6,000 to 50,000, and it's this suicidal sheriff takes on a murder that's happening in town. But it's an old Sioux legend that's what's happening, killing people. So he has to take that on. Kind of fun.
Oh, wow. Wow.
My first thing into horror. So your buddy right there, mm-hmm. James, he's a horror guy. Mm-hmm. And he was the one who promoted this. Think about that. He actually got me thinking about that. So that's what I was doing.
Good. I should look forward to reading that. I do like a good bit of horror, as you know.
It's a good horror. I'm trying to go, I got a different path that goes down, and it's just really, it's like based in North Dakota, and it's, we opened up the book with the cop playing Russian roulette with a gun at his desk, and then he gets a call that, sheriff, there's been a murder, and he stops his suicide, he has to go settle the murder. And it's a lot of backstory to it. A lot of fun.
Oh, cool. I like that.
Nice.
Horror.
I like that. Yeah. I mean, do you watch horror? Do you like horror movies, reading horror books, or I like good horror books.
I'm so tired. I got to tell you, dude, I cannot stand the Friday the 13th, the Jason the 15th, the things that they never die. I can't stand that stuff. What are we doing? People just idiots. They got a big piggy bank every time they make those movies, and they're going to make a lot of money, so that's what they do. It's there to be done, So,
It is just a cynical grab. If you want, I caught it on, was it Netflix? It was called The Night House. I think it was Netflix. It's some good jump scares. It's creepy. It's one of those that gets you thinking. I good psychological horror with some nice jumpy bits. And I would recommend it if you want to see a good bit of horror. I think you're not going to see slashes and teenagers getting heads chopped off and all the rest of it, but it's a good thought-provoking horror, which I think we all appreciate.
And the guy dies fast. Is that fat guy who's about to get sex for the first time. He's done. He's number one killed. He's killed first, and they work their way down the hole. You know who's going to die? The fat guy's dying first. He's gone. The promiscuous couple's next. It's always the same MO. It so bores me. It just bores me. Things like The Shining, I like stuff that's original and new and gets after it. That's what I like. This is what I'm trying to write. Yeah. I'm trying to get that where it's new, that it's new to the audience. What I'm doing is new. I'm always trying to bring new stuff out there because I get bored with those old movies and stuff.
Yeah.
And, having a screenwriter in the background.
I totally agree. But obviously, maybe we're in the minority because they keep churning them out because people pay to go see them. So
there's
a market there.
They get a market there. Anything, but my son comes home every night with a different horror. So he's a homicide detective for LAPD. So he has to react to all these murders.
Wow.
I get a lot of horror stories from him. So, what the heck? The real stuff. And, he turned to me one day and says, Pop, this is just real evil out there. There's evil. Nothing else explains it, but he sees the results of it every night. So I say, okay.
That must be difficult. Cannot be an easy job. I mean, how does he handle it? I mean, does he keep himself together? Or he must have some nights what the hell is going on?
There's a police show out right now where the cop is not a nice guy all his life, but he's a really good cop. I think my son lets steam off in other ways, but he's a really good cop. You know what I'm saying? He's really good. I mean, he goes trivially after. He doesn't give up. He was a big-time college football player, and he has that intensity to keep on going with a case. He recently found a guy. They were laughing at my son because he thought one of the victims might have been buried in the backyard. So he started digging in the backyard, and he said, man, I went about 5 feet, and I hit his back. It was like hitting hard jelly, and the victim was down there.
Oh, jeez,
He found the guy. The guy killed his mother previously, and then it killed his uncle and buried him in the backyard. So those are horror stories in themselves. So.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, it's way scarier than any horror book or something, what humans can do to each other. It's just way worse.
It's the more personal a murder is, the more horrifying it is. It's not just like a guy randomly down. It's the guy that's romantically involved with people. That's when it gets terrifically horrible. Well, that's what you have to do. So there's a lot of horror stories there, too. So that's about it.
Yeah, that'll keep you busy for a while if you're going to write about any of those.
Yeah, he wants to write about those.
I mean, have you ever thought of collaborating with your son and doing some true crime stuff? Because that would be brilliant.
He talks about something. The problem is LAPD is very careful of what gets out there. And he could lose his job if I collaborate with him. And of all the law agencies, no one's more under scope than LAPD, where they're constantly being watched. So he's got to worry about that stuff. That's the problem.
Of course. Yeah.
He had ran the sex crimes unit in LA for 2 years, and he came up with he saved a lot of money. He said, you know, we can do it. And we came up with a book title called The Sex Detective, where he goes around and solves sex crimes. But how do we keep his name out of it? That's the problem. How do we keep his name out of it? You know, so.
Right.
That's not going to be. Plus, even if you change the name, you know, I mean, you'd have to change the cases so much that, you know, I mean, you can't decide it was him. Yeah, that's a shame, really, because
he goes to court. He really believes in justice. He goes after people, and he'll even go after someone he's investigating, find out he's not guilty. He'll stand up for that person against the DA. DAs don't like him because Marcel will always tell the truth. They just want a conviction. He'll stand up for them. So it's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
He did the right thing.
Yeah, very honorable.
So there's a bunch of stuff to write. I have a bunch of stuff in my life. I'm going to get these two other books out and then keep on writing. Put my nose down to the grind. So hopefully this thing picks up a little. I'm doing okay with sales. I hope it picks up a little bit and, you know, we'll see what happens. And the agent, like I said, he's going to start bringing their production companies and maybe they can make a movie out of it, whatever. I think it lends itself to a movie quite well, actually.
Say, or maybe even like a Netflix limited series sort of thing, six part or eight part, because I think the thing that I like about it is the character, which your main character has, he's got so much depth, you know, you could do so much with it, you know, you could go more, you know, a TV series could explore his backstory more, and there's all that going on, I certainly think so.
He's a real guy, you know. I'm so tired. I know you guys probably like, but I'm so tired of Marvel characters ruling the world, you know, and doing all stuff. And I wanted, I'm really close in the black community. Like I said, I coached here for a long time. I wanted to give people, and a lot of my kids that I coach are buying the book. I want to give people a guy who's half black, who's a hero, who's got all kinds of faults and stuff, but he never gives up, and he sticks to his ideals. And he's not a victim, and he goes out and he becomes a hero and he saves the day, you know, and that's what I wanted to put out there. So we can do that, a real character, not a Marvel character, never will exist in the world. And that's what, you know, I want to put reality out there again a little bit. So
yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, the whole Marvel, I just so tired of it because they just churn out the same old. It's always, we're doing Spider-Man. Again, why are you telling Spider-Man? We all know, literally, Batman. They've got a new Batman movie out, which is telling the same story as the last six that they've done. It's just, the thing is, we see so much originality, like your book, and we get submissions literally day and day. Some brilliant stuff, and we publish great stuff.
Yes.
Brilliantly original ideas, great heroes, great monsters, whatever. And yet they churn out another DC movie. They spent, whatever, $200 million on a DC movie or a sequel or a reboot.
Yeah,
it's just, there's so much. It's so frustrating because I know there's some great talent out there. And it's just – but then again, you know, we keep churning out. We keep writing the books, churning them out, and people are reading them. And, you know, we will change that one book at a time. I'm convinced.
Yeah,
I hope
definitely.
They do. People have to bring their standards up. That's what they got to bring. They got to demand more originality, more stuff, and hopefully they start buying books that are more original and movies that are more original. That's what they it's up to them. The studios are cowards. They're going to do whatever makes them money. So that's what they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the best writing is all the stuff on TV you see right now. All those TVs, the old, you know, like the Yellowstone series and all that stuff. That's amazing writing.
I've been sort of binging, you know, I will find like these limited series. And I've just finished one, it's a British one called White Lines. Brilliant, absolutely, just great. The characters are there, the depth.
Yeah,
everything. And, It's like a limited 10-parter. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. You know, and I'm with you. I like that. I'd rather sit and, you know, commit to, you know, 10 one-hour episodes than sit through a 2.5-hour movie that I come out of it and I've forgotten it by the time I get back in the car, you know?
I took my grandson to that Spider-Man movie, the last one. It was horrible. It was horrible. I almost had to throw stuff at the screen. It was terrible.
Yeah.
It was a horrible film.
I wrote that
Gunny's character, his girlfriend's character. She's pretty spicy. She's a lot of fun in it. And I wrote it for that actress, Kelly Riley, who's on Yellowstone now, but now she's a big star again. So I wrote it before that movie, that TV show came out. I was hoping she would, you know, be interested in that if I ever made it into a movie. She's a great actress. So I just, you know, so I think of people when I write who I want to be in that. When I write a book, I think of who is the person in my brain, what they look like from the actress or actor I know. So I always think of that. So it helps me.
Yes. Whenever I pick up a book to read it, I'm casting the characters. I'm like, well, that would be – but the bad thing – well, I don't know if it's the bad thing, but, like, I don't think we get as much I've totally lost what I was going to say there. But, you know, we used to watch TV and there would be a commercial and you'd see a new movie coming out. But I think with the way we do TV now, you know, you just – you know, it's not quite the same. So, I mean – I never know what movies are coming out. I never know. I don't know half the actors anymore.
Yeah,
I mean, there was, you know, we had the awards show not too long ago, and like half the movies that I didn't watch it, to be honest. But I mean, I didn't know the actors. I didn't know the movies. So Hollywood has changed. So it's not quite. Whenever I'm picturing an actress now, I'm like, it's somebody who's pretty much washed up by now. But I'm like, they would have been perfect 20 years ago. So,
yeah, no, you're right. I got out of television. The last thing I worked on was a movie called Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. I've been out of it since then. So I don't know anything.
Wow,
that's
a long time ago.
That's a while.
It was a great. We shut the whole thing in Pasadena, Los Angeles. People think it was the Midwest. We made our own snow. We shut the whole thing out here. That was kind of interesting to work on that show.
Oh, wow.
A good movie as well.
Oh, yeah. John Candy was a terrific person. It's a shame he died, but, you know, he was totally out of shape. Smoked cigarettes like a fiend, you know. And anyhow, so I don't want to put anybody down, but there was an actor in the show who wasn't very nice. I'm not going to say his name, but, you know, figure it out.
Well, AC, I've had such a great time with you on the show. I think that we're going to have to have you back and do just a whole show with just you. But, no, thank you so much for coming on the show. We are just about out of time
for
the first segment. But let us, real quick, give me a plug of where we can find you online.
Oh, well, it's just I'm on Amazon right now. I got a website. It's not real good. I can find AC Turner and a website. You can find it, but I'm on Amazon and all that stuff. And I'm on Amazon. They're doing pretty well. I'm on a bunch of stuff. You know, I'm confused. You listen, when it comes to tech, I am the worst. That's why I use another 2 pencil. Okay, I'm not smart. I'm pretty much. I see a computer, I start drooling. Okay, I'm an idiot when it comes to computers.
For all of our listeners out there, go ahead.
Yeah.
For all of our listeners out there, go out and buy Semper Fi Brothers by AC Turner. And thank you so much. And we're going to have you back on soon.
I appreciate
thank
you.
It.
All right, guys. Bye.
Thanks a lot.
We'll
speak again soon. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Yeah.
Well, that flew by. That did fly by, unfortunately. I could have chatted all night. But we do. You need a new box of wine opening, and I need a wee. So let's be right back after these messages.
Panic Room Radio Show is brought to you by Hellbound Books Publishing, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher, along with links to all of their available works across platforms, at hellboundbookspublishing.com. In the mood for something steamy to read? Check out erotica author Jennifer Lynn at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James and Xtina at their respective websites, jameslongmore.com for James and darkpoetprincess.com for Xtina. Don't forget to follow The Panic Room on social media, Facebook, unofficial The Panic Room Radio Show. Our Vimeo channel with all of our previous shows. The New Panic Room Radio Show. And come visit us at our website, www.panicroomradio.com.
Wonder what tomorrow will bring. Maybe a diamond ring.
Well, it's all right, even if they say you're wrong. Well, it's all right. Sometimes you gotta be strong. Well, it's all right, as long as you got somewhere to lay. Well, it's all right. Every day is judgment day.
Somewhere down the road away, you'll think of me and wonder where I am these days. Maybe somewhere down the road when somebody plays the purple haze.
Well, it's all right, even when push comes to shove. Well, it's all right, if you got someone to love. Well, it's
I'm just glad to be here, happy to be alive.
At the end of the line, of the line.
And it don't matter if you're by my side.
At the end of the line,
I'm satisfied.
Well, it's all.
Refreshing.
Good, good, good,
I'm so
good,
glad
good.
It's Friday tomorrow. I am so ready for the weekend. So.
I'm ready for the weekend since Sunday afternoon, to be honest with you. It's just kind of a longer weekend. Like, I'll be working. I mean, I'm not sure what else to do these days. You know, I have no life. That's the problem.
I work so much. Well, we work hard, and I can't wait for the weekend because then I can kind of, relax and read. I have been missing reading. I really have. That's why I really haven't been watching a whole lot of TV, because I've been just wanting to read so much, and there's just never enough time in the day. And then I'm like, I'm going to go to bed early tonight, or just kind of early, and I'm going to read in bed, and Never happens. Never happens.
I get by the time I get to the end of my day, the last thing I want to do is read. And it's a shame because I love reading. Yeah. I always have loved reading. But, you know, I just prop myself up in bed and put some, you know, put a TV show on and probably fall asleep in it within 20 minutes. And that's sort of my life. And, you know, we get up and do it all over again.
Such a cheery thought.
could be worse, I suppose. Could be worse. I'm not sure how, but it could be worse, you know. But, you know, a little bit sad for me. The highlight of my, probably the highlight of my mum's so far is refinancing my car. And I was so excited when I got accepted. And it was like, this is pathetic. This is the best thing that's happened to me in how long? You know, fair, you know, because when I bought the car, my credit score was not so good. I mean, still fresh, actually. Mm-hmm. It was only about 3 months old, wasn't it? Stupid. And they stung me, like 14.7%. Like, it's stupid.
Wow.
And I've now got it down to 2.99. But you still listen to I'm talking about it like it's, like, brilliant, you know? Like, the best thing about it. But I'm going to save $1,700 over the course of the rest of the loan and $50 a month. So, you know,
that's
maybe I should write a short story about it and call it I refinanced my car. And it was just like the world's dullest short story ever. Although I would work dinosaurs into it because why not?
Why wouldn't you? Yes. I mean, I do think that we have to ask that question more often, and we keep forgetting. I definitely think that when we bring on Samantha, we'll have to. Did we ask her that already? I kind of feel like we did.
I don't, maybe not. And I think it's certainly worth mentioning, I'd say. So I suppose it's sort of that time. Is it for the lovely Samantha?
It is.
Is it? Are you sure?
Well, that depends if she's called in or not. I mean, if she's called in, it's definitely time. If not, you know, we could just babble on for a little longer.
We could, but no, I think it is time to do this.
Oh, hey. Looks like it's time to review something. Oh, no.
It's the lovely Samantha. You don't get an audience cheer because I didn't press the button, but how are you this evening?
I'm good. How are you guys?
I'm weary tonight, you know. Kind of wishing it was today, tomorrow, but it's not. So there's that going on. How about you? How's things, the lovely world of lovely Samantha?
Things are going good. We're good over here.
Oh, don't go on about it. Okay. What is it? just rubbing our faces in it. Oh, everything's great with me. Yeah, thanks. What are you reviewing for us this evening, Samantha?
I went with Only the Stains Remain by Ross Jeffrey, and it is a very beautifully written book. I think it's a safe book if you have triggers, because it's about these two brothers who suffer sexual and physical abuse by their uncles when their mom dies from cancer. And even though you know, like, what's going on because of the way that it's written, it's not, like, graphically detailed. The abuse isn't. So I feel like it's a safe book, you know, if you have triggers. I really like that it didn't really go into detail. I feel like maybe if they had, it would have ruined the book. It really drew me in. I've thought about these characters a whole lot since I finished this book. There's a scene where Jude is talking about his brother Kyle, and he only has one shoe on, and you'd have to read the book to understand, like, the context of it, but it was just, like, it was heart-wrenching. I was like, oh, like, you know, I think I lost a tear there because it was just so intense. It was a beautiful scene. I gave it a 5-star. I really, really like this. I've never read anything by Ross Jeffrey before, but this was a good book. I really did like it.
Now, is it horror?
I mean, I'm going to classify it as horror, but I guess maybe it depends on how you look at it. It's horrifying because, you know, these kids are so abused by their uncles. You know, I find it pretty horrifying. But it's like I said, it's a safe book if you have triggers. You know, it's not, like, really graphic. You know what's going on, but it's not, like, it doesn't go into detail. They give you just enough which I know a lot of people that, you know, don't want to read books like that because they're like, you know, they're triggered. And this is, I think this is a pretty safe book. I really liked it.
You know, I have to ask, what is the line between a trigger and, like, spoiling something? Like, you know, I mean, I think sometimes that can be a very fine line if you don't want
it
to
really
be.
It really is, because
you know?
There's some books, you know, like John Ethan and Matt Shaw, they put right there for everybody to see, like, this is a triggering read. You know, if you have triggers, might want to, like, stay away. But some books aren't as blatantly obvious. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
sometimes I feel like if you say too much, it does ruin the story. Trigger warnings are one of those things that are so controversial anyway. Some people think they belong, some people think they don't. You know, some people get, like, irate if you forget to mention them. You know, other people are like, oh, it's okay. You know, so I try to give, like, the basics, you know, like if there's abuse or, like, animal abuse, things like that. But I can't – there are some books you have so many triggers, you can't sit and list them all. Matt Shaw's a great example of that. You know, some books you just don't have the time to sit and list them all. So
there are definitely times that I have read a description of a book and seen a trigger warning that makes me want to read. I'm like, oh, my God, hell yeah,
yes.
I'm right there. So,
yes.
I was actually
scrolling through Facebook today watching the people, like, they were complaining about John Athan's The Groomer, you know, because it's so graphic.
Oh, yeah.
And I was I was really like, guys, come on. When you're scrolling through Amazon and you come across a book with a cover like that that says The Groomer, what did you think it was going to be about? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, people get so worked up over how books are written. And I feel like if it gets under your skin, you know, it did what it was supposed to do. And a lot of agents, people get very irate. They're like, why would he write that? Why would anybody write that? There's something wrong with them. And it's just kind of like, what did you think The Groomer was going to be about, Karen? Like, what did you think you were going to get? I would have said
maybe pet care.
The dog groomer, yes, yeah, you know.
Oh,
that's a good point. But if you had to look at the cover, maybe you would probably not see pet care, but...
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I have to tell you, obviously, groomer, but I'm taking him out of there. No. No, I won't,
you know,
no, I won't do
also,
that. No, not my puppy, no. No, it's just wrong.
As much as Amazon, like, censors the books, I think that... you know, knowing what this book is about, he would have to be very careful in the words he chooses, even, don't you think? I mean, to not get it banned.
Amazon makes no sense to me, and I think some of the indie authors will tell you that, because, like, Amazon's a great example of that. They they let, you know, like, Sick Bastards and stuff stay up, but then they take down other people's work that don't even have anything remotely like that in the title. You know, it's got a basic cover. Amazon makes no sense to me. I don't understand how they pick and choose, you know, what they censor and what they don't. But I wish they didn't censor any of it, because you lose out on finding good authors that way, or they'll bury it.
Yes.
You know, in, like, a genre that it's not really a part of. You know what I mean? So it'll be like a horror, you know, like something horror related, but it'll get stuck in, like, you know, erotica or something crazy like that because of the way Amazon is. And then you lose, you know, Goodreads that way too.
Right. Well, thank you so much, Samantha, for coming on. And, you know, one of these times we are going to have one of our guests.
We need to have a debate about, you know, censorship and all the rest of it, because I think it's pretty, you know, I see it pop up now and then in the writers groups that I'm involved in on Facebook and whatnot, and it's a big thing. Like I say, I mean, Amazon is so arbitrary, and I think it's worthy of debate. So we need to put our serious pants on one week and have an open debate.
Absolutely.
Or in my case, put some pants on, because I'm home and it's just me, you know. It makes putting my trash out interesting for the neighbours, you know. You know. But there you go. Moving on.
Thank you so much, Samantha. We will enjoy it so much when we have you on. So I can't wait to talk to you next week and see what you have to review for us.
Thank you, guys. It's always great to talk
Thank
to you.
Thank you. Speak to you later. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So I think time is marching on. We need to cut off there. It's a bit rude of me, but I just got bored with that. So it's time to bring on our second guest of the evening.
And just to let you know, Sam, he's just kidding. He's just kidding about that.
No,
really.
I'm not. No, no, I'm not. I really, my interest, it started pretty good and it sort of waned. So towards the end, I need to move on. I'm just bored with it now. So carry on.
Our second guest of the evening, he's a returning guest, which I love it when they return because, you know, yeah, is a horror author, Stephen Bazidlo.
Hello.
Hello. That is, you got way too high of an expectation with that kind of applause.
No pressure. No pressure, Stephen. It's all on you.
I said your name right this
James,
time, didn't I? I said
question.
It right.
Oh, yes. Yes, you did. James, to answer your question from the beginning of the show, what you are looking for is Rule 34. The movie that the other guy was talking about was Full Metal Jacket with Arlie Ermey. And, sorry, I've been listening to the show, and it's been killing me to just want to say, dude, I know the answer.
Thank you.
It's like a game show.
Speaking of movies, actually, it's exciting bit of news. Picked it up from Paul Kane, funny enough. There's a new Cronenberg movie out later this year, which is his first in a lot of years. So
is he even still alive?
Yes, he is. I remember sneaking in to see The Brood back in the sort of late 70s, and then obviously there was Slither and Shivers and all that, and he did a whole load of sort of schlock horror stuff, obviously Scanners. I think Existence was the last one of the type that he did back in 99. So a lot of buzz going on around that. And it's nice, you know, it'll be typical Cronenberg. But again, as we said earlier, it'll be different. It'll be original. It'll be unique. It'll be as creepy as hell. So looking forward to that. Anyway, that's my excitement.
Well, fingers crossed.
Even more exciting than refinancing my car. And hey, you know, we could spend the rest of the show talking about that if you want.
Yeah, but instead...
instead, something better.
Yes, yeah, Stephen's new book, Videos. And I love this tagline, a box of videos from an abandoned psych ward. What could go wrong? I mean, really, what could go wrong? So tell us a little bit more about it, Stephen. tell us a little bit more about it, Stephen.
Oh, sorry, I didn't hear you. Okay, so basically the main story arc follows Squeaky and his friend Big Tippy, who is a wannabe, you know, YouTuber-ish wanna type, kind of, can't use it for the book, but you get what I mean. He's one of those types of people. Mm-hmm. So pretty much the whole story revolves around these two guys are skipping school. They go to a psych ward that was abandoned in their town, and they come across a box of videos of different video recording equipment, like drones and cell phones and, you know, 360 cameras, that kind of stuff, like action cameras, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And when they start watching them, it mostly follows Squeaky, who's watching them, and then he delivers them to Big Tippy so that he can put them up on his, you know, social media channels.
Oh, wow.
I really like the VHS horror videos movie series.
Yeah.
And I wanted to write something along those lines. So basically there's one long narrative for the book with each of these videos taking up a chapter of the book. So it was kind of a, and they all kind of, in a way, tie into the main story arc. This is actually the first of maybe two books or maybe a trilogy. I mean, I haven't made a decision on that yet, but I'm already working on the second book. So I'll have to get back to you on that one.
How many different stories are there in videos? Like how many different video?
There's six video stories, but there's a seventh main story that is going through with that. So technically it's seven, but it's more or less six videos that you get to experience with this kid as he's watching it or watching them.
I think that with all the different horror genres we have, definitely psych wards are really freaking creepy. They really are. I do watch a lot of those ghost hunter shows, and I get so excited when they do one with the an abandoned psych ward or something. They're just something so incredibly creepy.
Well, don't get too excited. The whole story doesn't take place at the psych ward. That's
right.
That's just like the initial place that sets everything off, if you will. I don't want to get your expectations for it to be in a psych ward the whole time. There are a few scenes that take place in the psych ward, though, that are key scenes. So there is that. However, that's not the main draw of it. The main draw of it is that it's more or less, what would you do if you found a box of videotapes like this? Like that, and what would you do if you're a kid that has access to social media that comes from a really crappy family? Would you try to make money off of it, or would you try to report it, type of thing? That's more or less the question I want somebody to ask themselves when they go into it. Like, well, what would you do? Me, I'd watch them and go, you know, I'd more or less, I'd probably try to make money off of it.
Well, I definitely am interested, and I want to hear more. Do you have an excerpt to read for us?
Yes, I do, actually. I just wanted to see what the time is, but I want to make sure I have enough time for it, though. Okay. So the part that I'm about to read is in the second chapter. He's about to watch the first video that he decided to pull out of the box. I'm not going to go into detail about what happened before that because I don't want to ruin anything for that. However, this is the first video that he starts watching. Okay. So I'm starting in like the middle of the chapter, so it's going to be a little bit of a jarring start. So, okay, we're going to go with that.
Okay, go for it.
And action. The view was beautiful. I didn't recognize the area, but wherever they were was amazing. It had amazing mountain views. It was the fall. Her hike was spotted with parts where she would stop and just take in the experience. The crunch of the leaves was, like the rest of the video, muffled after a minute or two of her walking. I had to mute the audio from the annoying sound, but the view was great. Maybe 10 minutes had passed, and I was completely engrossed in this, before all of a sudden it just started going very fast. Thinking I hit the fast-forward button somehow, I paused it, and when I played it back again, it was still going fast. Pausing the video and spinning the camera view around, I saw that she wasn't speeding up the footage. She was running, and she was scared. Given the look of terror on her face, I searched the frozen scene but couldn't see what was chasing her. Pressing play, I watched as closely as I could. The video stopped again, and the woman's head swiveled around. In an instant, she bolted in a different direction. Pausing again, I swung the camera to see if the direction she was facing, and I felt my body tense. There was a leg as if someone was hiding behind a tree, just visible for a second. Oh, shit. What am I watching? Should I be watching this? I thought of what the implications were from this, I had to know. Hesitation filled me as I pressed the button again, trying to keep an eye on whatever that figure was. I followed the few glimpses I could catch, and the shadow of the person was huge, very clearly a man. He had to be almost 7 feet tall. He moved so unbelievably fast that I almost couldn't track him. Several seconds of the camera jerking in all directions until when the girl looked back and the view of the forest ended, it was replaced by gray rocks speeding by. Spinning the camera, the woman's face was contorted in a way that made my stomach churn before violently impacting the ground. her face exploding upon impact with the boulders. Sitting in silence for a minute, the video kept playing. I felt my stomach lurch and I puked into my trash can. I spun the camera away from the horrible sight, her body still twitching. Sitting in shock, I took a few more deep breaths after dry heaving again, seeing there were a few minutes left. I scanned it in the end, stopping when I saw the camera move again. Pressing play, it looked like the camera was lifted. Scanning the panorama, I stopped when the face of a large man came into view. He had some kind of mask made out of a collage of doll faces embedded directly into his skin. His eyes seemed to look over the camera before he bent down, hefting the now dead woman's body with ease onto his shoulder. A few steps later, the video ends. Sitting back in my chair, I felt dread and I tried to rationalize what I had just witnessed. No way this was real. No person could move as fast as that guy had. When did he even start following her? How did the camera end up in this box? It was some time before I could snap out of the trance-like state I found myself in, and I think the only reason I did was because I heard my mother call me downstairs for dinner. Having just vomited out my insides and the image of that girl's head firmly burned into my memory, I was not feeling the whole eating thing. I shouted down that I would eat later. I knew in my current condition they would see through whatever lie I told them. However, I felt a compulsion to rewatch the video to see if there were any clues as to if this was just a well-done fake video or if I seriously watched a woman get stalked and forced off a cliff. Starting the video over again, it didn't take long for me to find the strange man. The woman was leaving her car, stepping down into a ditch to make it to whatever trail she was on. Searching the area, I couldn't see much, but when a minute or two passed, she made her way, her first stop, and when I searched the background, I saw the distinct outline of the man in the tree, pulling what looked like a body bag up the trunk, then looking in the unaware woman's direction, before hastily trying to tying the bag in place and jumping to the ground. I was shocked that he hadn't snapped his ankles with the height. Throughout the video, I watched this giant of a man move silently as he stalked this person up until she caught a glimpse of him. That's when she started running, and the unusual speed and almost acrobatic movements through the woods kept him on her trail with ease. He would be on the ground 1 second, then the next he would be halfway up a tree. When I got to the cliff, I turned the camera away so I didn't have to see the woman die again. The man standing, looking down over the ledge before walking into the woods, looking in the direction he had to have come from. When picking up the camera, I found the man walking down the cliff with his face completely parallel to the ground. No wires, no rope, just one slow con step after the other until reaching the bottom. And I think that's about as far as I'm going to go with that.
Yeah. What is he? What is he? Is he some kind of like Bigfoot or a demon or you're not going to tell us, are you?
Well, that's the thing is that he doesn't know. Squeaky doesn't know whether or not this is a real video or not. To him, this is just, you know, one of those found footage videos that you find on, you know, YouTube where somebody has a piece of string tied to a door or something to slam it shut. So this takes place in a time where, you know, you never know what you're watching, whether it's real or not. But this is actually a very tame story in comparison to some of the stuff that's in here. The only reason I didn't do any of the creepier or creepy crawly ones was simply because it would give too much away for the other stories, or for the whole story. And given it's only a novella.
I definitely enjoyed that. And I have to say, in these days, it is really hard when you see something online to know, is this real? I mean, there's so many things that you can do nowadays with technology that I think you have to question everything that you see, even something that everybody's telling you, oh, this is real. Really? Are you sure? Did you see it filmed? I mean, it's just too easy now.
scary.
Well, in my spare time, I used to make like commercials for my books and that kind of stuff, making using stop motion animation and doing the whole tying things up with razor thin string so that you can make it look like it's moving so that you couldn't see the string when you're videotaping it, you know, that kind of stuff. And knowing all the tips and tricks when it comes to doing that just with your home job or stuff, it's like, kind of obvious that this is fake. But
still, I think that's a pretty interesting concept. And I could definitely see it as a found footage like film. And, you know, those are another kind of genre that I've always really enjoyed, the movies. Yeah, I think Grave Encounters,
yeah,
I think, was that like
mine.
A found footage kind of like? Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
definitely.
Yeah, Grave Encounters was good.
That was a very
the first
good
one.
Yeah.
The second one sucked.
Said the second one, yeah. I was about to say the second one was awful, but the first one was brilliant. And again, there's a lot of people, you know, when they're done well, you know, found footage can be, I mean, for me, it kind of stretches reality a little bit, but I think Cloverfield, I thought, was a very good sort of big budget found footage. But for me, it's the small, you know, the smaller ones, like you say, like Grave Encounters and what's the other one?
Blair Witch. Blair Witch got a lot of flack, but you know what? For what it was, the whole concept of the marketing campaign and everything they did for that movie, I loved the movie. It legitimately creeped the hell out of me.
It
was something that I was not used to. The second and the remake kind of sucked, but the first one, the original, I thought was good.
Yeah,
so
I saw
what did
that,
you think of the Paranormal?
Wait, what was that?
What do you think of the Paranormal Activities? Anybody like those?
No.
I love the idea.
They are a guilty. They are a guilty pleasure of mine. I love the movies for what they are, but by no means are they scary.
Well, it's like 90 minutes of watching a CCTV and then something jumpy at the end. For me, it was like, this is terrible. I mean, it's like, no.
Yeah, but they took a budget of what, $27,000 and made it into $280 million.
But again, that was on the hype. The same with Blair Witch. I mean, if you took all the hype away from Blair Witch, it would be nothing. It would just be a student film. But it was the hype. It was the marketing around it. That was the clever bit. That was the clever bit. And it worked. Obviously, it got people. But I say Blair Witch did it for me. It absolutely scared the willies out of me, I have to say.
It was good.
The funny part, fun fact, the scariest part of that movie was actually never caught on film properly. The scene where she's running through the woods and she, you know, starts having the snot bubbles and everything. In between those two scenes, you were actually supposed to see the Blair Witch chasing her in the woods. She was food starved and wasn't paying attention, they never got the shot, but it actually made it a more scary
scene.
Because
you didn't know why. I think that's the beauty of the film is that you got your imagination fired up, and your imagination made all the scare, to be honest. And that, like you say, had you seen it, would have taken a bit away from that, certainly for me.
Oh, yeah. It's always the less you see, the more scare you'll get from it.
Yeah.
And they took it to the extreme in that case. But it's kind of like the whole Jaws thing. You only see, you know, Bruce, what, maybe 15 minutes of the whole movie?
Yeah, exactly. And that, to be fair, that was because it kept breaking down and it looked a bit iffy. But it made the film, the fact that you didn't. I mean, the whole thing with the big yellow barrels, that was, I think Spielberg had to do that on the fly because, you know, the mechanical shark broke down. So, I mean, it was just so incredibly well done. You're right. I mean, you don't have to see everything. Alien was the same. You know, it was, you didn't see the whole alien until near the end of the movie.
No.
Bits of it. Yeah. And that made it more terrifying.
Oh, yeah.
I hate to do this. We're just about to run out of time for our show. I thank you so much, Stephen. I know. I thank you so much, Stephen, for coming back on. And you have to promise to come back.
Oh, I have no problem ever being on here whenever you guys need somebody.
Yay.
Just feel free to let me know. I have a couple of books I'm
awesome.
Working on now that I hope to have out later on this year. So,
awesome.
You know. And some of them are some of them are continuations actually for the Darkest End series that I was on here last time for.
Awesome. I'll definitely be reaching out to you. And for all of our listeners, go out there and buy videos by Stephen Bazidlo. Thank you so much for being on.
Yep, not a problem.
Thanks. Well, have a great rest of your evening. Okay, bye-bye.
Have a good night, guys.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Time has beaten us yet again. Every week it does, doesn't it? And it is, I'm afraid it's time to say good night, Xtina.
Good night, Xtina.
Good night.